Hi, my name is Kunal, and welcome to the Geeks of the Valley podcast, which connects with some of the brightest minds globally who are leading their respective industries today to discuss the hottest upcoming industry trends and how their work is affecting the global economy. What started off as a coffee chat has now grown into a global platform for visionaries. This morning, from the New York area, we have the global president of Endeavor joining us today. Please welcome Adrian Garcia Araños. Adrian, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Kunal. Thanks for having me.
And I heard most recently one of your companies IPO'd on the NASDAQ. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a big accomplishment. The first Arab tech company to actually IPO in NASDAQ. So it's a historical moment. And not only that, it's a Lebanese company. So which is why I had to push our scheduled meeting a few minutes, because it was a good excuse, as you can see. But exciting moment for sure.
Truly. And if you don't mind, can you tell us some more about what this startup does?
So I hate defining companies using other companies as a definition, but in essence, what Angami is the Spotify of the Middle East. So think of all your Middle Eastern artists and Middle Eastern music, plus other artists as well. It's a platform that has them. So it's a music sharing, music streaming platform.
Exciting. I'm actually surprised Spotify has chosen not to acquire them.
It's definitely interesting, and I have no idea what Spotify's plans are. I know that they have a lot on their plate right now, but I'm sure that they're keeping a close eye. But it's one of those things. I mean, that we see very often now. Companies that are operating out of countries that are below the radar, and they attack regions or niches that are quite big, but they do it in a way in which, you know, other multinationals are looking at other markets, and by the time they realize they're actually much bigger than they realize now.
Truly. And Adrian, to crack away at the first official question, you know, of the day here, tell me about yourself and your background and how it led you to the path of joining Endeavor and becoming the global president.
Perfect. So I guess that my background is very diverse in that sense. I mean, I need to start with what I studied. I studied political science, which has nothing to do with entrepreneurship nor finance. My first job out of college was in finance in the trading floor. Loved the people I worked with, learned a ton, really did not like doing that, but still dedicated, 2-3 years to doing it. And I say that I'm sure that my boss would agree that I was not that great of a trader, as much as I still get along with him, and we're in very good terms with him and the rest of the team. From that, I went to foreign trade. And then from foreign trade, I landed in the US and I ended up working at a media group at The Economist. Did that for quite a few years, loved every minute of it. Once again, loved my colleagues, loved the atmosphere, loved everything. And then went into banking again, but this time in the corporate communication side. You know? So everything that I had learned in my media days, I could actually apply it and think much more strategically of positioning, et cetera, you know? Relationship building and all of that. And I got the call years ago to join Endeavor because Endeavor was launching their affiliate in Spain. And they called me and they asked me if I wanted to join. I loved Endeavor. I'd known about Endeavor for many years before that due to other circumstances and other friends and connections. No? So I've always been a huge fan, but it wasn't really my plans. It wasn't in the works. No, I did love entrepreneurship. I loved tech, but this was a very intimidating move. I did take it. I have to admit it wasn't one of the things that I said yes immediately. I had to think about it. And right now, the only thing I do is I kick myself saying, why did I not say yes immediately? It's a good thing I did say yes, though. But 8 years later, I absolutely love what I do, the people I meet, the people I work with, my colleagues here worldwide, the entrepreneurs, our mentors, our board members. It's truly fascinating. I've learned a ton about entrepreneurship, about venture, about investing, you name it. Now, I've been so exposed. Since we are sector agnostic, I've been exposed to so many different sectors. So I'd say that my path to get here has been a very, very convoluted one, because it's not a straight line, but I don't regret any of my past moments, and I'm loving what I'm doing right now.
So Adrian, taking, you know, a step back, what is Endeavor? What is so important about what you guys do which makes a difference.
So the essence of what we are, the essence of a community, a network. Now think of us as a network. The reality is that what we do is we support high impact entrepreneurs in emerging markets or economies in crisis. And basically what we're doing is we're selecting these entrepreneurs at their scale up stage, supporting them and betting on them early on. And we do this because we truly believe in these entrepreneurs, not only in what they're going to become and what their businesses are and, you know, how well the investors are going to make, but the reality is that there's much more to it. It's what we call the multiplier effect. And that's the thing that no one really double clicks onto. No, we were just speaking about an IPO earlier today, and everyone's going to be focusing on NASDAQ IPO and all the bankers that made it possible. No, but the reality is that there's much more there. I mean, there is a series of founders that founded a company out of Lebanon, in this case, but in other cases, it's founders out of any other country, angel investors that invested, and they are going to become investors in the next generation. These entrepreneurs, as they're successful, they become inspiration for the next generation. Obviously, they've learned a lot as they've been doing these things, so they become mentors also. If they get an opportunity to do a cash out, they actually also reinvest in the next generation. And all of a sudden, you see this whole multiplier effect, this effect of influence. Plus, all the entrepreneurs that come out of these ventures of people that worked in the early days in a startup that was starting, and they said, "Hey, this is feasible. I can do it myself, and I have another idea that is non-related, and I can launch." And all of a sudden, from one or two or three founders, comes this whole universe or ecosystem, as we call it, of entrepreneurs. So it's not only the company and they're becoming public or being acquired or whatever. It's everything else that has flourished thanks to them.
And at the moment, you are operating in 40 plus markets, supporting startups who have already had between $500,000 to $10 million in annual revenue and an average 3-year CAGR of over 100%. What have been some of the most exciting growth stage startups you've been able to work with so far across these 40 plus markets?
Let's see, I never like responding with specific examples because I always feel that when I'm speaking of one, I'm leaving out another. And we have 1,400 active companies. So if I cite 3 or 4 of them, I'm going to be in the bad list for another 1,395, no? But I can definitely give you a couple of interesting cases. I'm mainly going to focus on the interesting cases that are much more, that people know more about, just because that gives a better sense, no? But I guess very excited to have met, seen, and engaged very early on with Guillaume Poussaz from Checkout.com, a London-based company, although the company came through our UAE office. It was selected from Dubai. That's where they had a main hub. And it's amazing. They bootstrapped the company to becoming a unicorn. And at their latest valuation right now, they're a 40 billion plus company. No? So it's been extremely exciting to see how someone bootstraps a fintech company to one of the leading companies in Europe right now. No? That would be one of the examples. From a very, I guess, selfish perspective, I would speak about a Spain example, not for any reason, just because it was the first unicorn that I got to engage very early on, and that was Cabify. Cabify is a transportation solution for Latin America and Spain. So basically, you can hail rides from an app. No? And it's been fascinating to see them. I mean, I met them when they were 50 employees, and they then became Spain's first unicorn and truly a global reference and a role model. Plus all that multiplier effect that I was speaking about with Cabify, of so many amazing founders across the world that started at Cabify and then went on to founding different companies. Now, I'm citing these two examples because they're very close and they're very relevant, and they're more, I mean, given that they're unicorns, people might have read more about them, but really there's so many others that are under the radar that we don't know that are just as exciting. No?
Having a business such as Endeavor, which supports entrepreneurs building businesses with unique, scalable, innovative, and potentially disruptive business models across these 40 plus markets, must give you some insight into not just how industry trends are moving, but how the global trend is moving in some regard. What are your thoughts on this?
It's very true. So it's fascinating. I'm going to take the example that I was using before of Cabify, a ride-hailing app. No, whenever people think of ride-hailing, normally what comes to mind is Uber, and maybe even Lyft. But the reality is that there was a mobility solution that was needed. The geolocation of your phone and the tracking was there. So we all had smartphones and we were all able to actually place order from or request things from our smartphones. And the solutions came about at more or less the same time. So if you look at Careem, Cabify, I don't know, all the other platforms that they came out in the different countries, they came out at the same time. The only thing is that the ones that came out in the US had an abundance of capital. No? So obviously they were able to blitz scale much faster. But it's amazing to see what we've seen in emerging markets coming out of the emerging markets. No? So the one thing I would say is that we were seeing solutions coming out at the same time and a lot of capital available, especially in the more emerging markets or the more mature markets. But what we're starting to see now is a trend in which things start or trends start in these emerging markets, and then they're moving on to more mature markets. Now, I would start with these this whole trend that there is right now of the buy now, pay later, no, the BNPL. We've been seeing these companies for the last few years coming out of emerging markets. There were tech based and et cetera. I mean, nothing to envy other global players that you know that we now know of. No, and now in the last year we've seen this now in more mature markets in all across Europe and the U.S. No, but that is something that we had seen before. No, I'd even say that there's also a trend as well in other areas. Like, I mean, secondhand cars, the online sale of secondhand cars. No, we also saw a trend there. Those are more or less solutions that came about at the same time. But you would think of Carvana, but at the same time you could think of Kavak, you could think of Cars 45, Carsum. I mean, there's so many other platforms worldwide, no, that have been coming up with a similar model at a very similar time. No, so one thing that I would note is the fact that we have seen trends now going on the other side, no, so coming more from the emerging markets and going into the more mature markets. Whereas before, it seemed that everyone was doing a Me Too. I'd say that now maybe the Me Too's are going in the other direction. No?
And Adrian, to wrap up our call with our last question for the day, what piece of advice would you give to people out there from the journey you have had so far in life?
Let's see. I mean, it's an interesting question. When we're young, when we're out of college, we're very anxious and we're very eager. And we want to get it done, and we want to get promoted, and there's everything that we want. And then, as we mature in age, I guess that the experience puts things in place. No, I would tell people just love what you do and love who you're doing it with. That's the most important part. If you're liking what you're doing and who you're doing it with, and you like your coworkers and you like the people that your leadership teams and the atmosphere and overall you're inspired, that is something that is easily taken for granted, and that it's important. It's the most important. I think that I would always say, follow your passion if that passion is leading you to what you want. No, things will happen, and they tend to happen in a very organic way. Careers are not built in a day; they're built in several years. And if that moment to shine has to come, it will come. You don't need to be too quick about it. No, so I would say, don't be too strategic. Don't obsess too much on, I have to be here by this age, I have to be here by the other age, I have to do this. This is my strategic plan. This is where I want to be in 5 years, because life happens. Life happens, and there's so much that's going to happen in between. I mean, there's the professional component, but then there's the family component too, and then there's the social component. So there's different parts of your life that will pull you in different directions. And I always tell people not to try to obsess about being at a certain point by a certain time, because things will happen. And if you're working and you're enjoying and you're loving what you're doing and you're engaging and you're meeting interesting people, things will happen organically. So my advice would be, just take one step at a time, take a day at a time. Yes, plan a bit ahead. Don't be completely erratic, but don't obsess too much if plans don't go as you plan them.
So coming back onto this point a bit, Adrian, when you say obsess, right? When you look at millennials and generation, you know, Zs, it seems they tend to obsess a little more over these things than older generations. In your opinion, what do you think is maybe the cause of that?
I never really thought as much of the cause. I've always been trying to think about what the response is, you know, and what we can provide, especially as an employer too, you know. But the one thing I do admit is that it's interesting because I'll rewind. I was having lunch not that long ago with my former boss at The Economist. And I was telling him, God, I have these millennials that are working with me and they're eager and they want this and they want that and they want to be promoted. And he looks at me and he's like, Adrian, do you remember when you worked with me? Yes. You're just describing yourself. That was you. I mean, so now you're frustrated because you're working with a lot of youth, which is good. And I'm like, well, it is good actually. It's people that are they're eager and they're motivated and they're accomplished. And so I feel that when we're young, we're always there. No, I think that maybe the context was different back then, and we took things a bit, you know, more gradually, and we decided to stay on board in companies for a decade or 5 years or whatever. But we took longer careers. And now maybe we don't. Also, mobility is much easier now. I mean, there's just jobs all over the place. And I know that we're now in a very hot labor market, especially in some of the, in some country like the US or parts of Europe, in which we're all competing for talent. You know? So we need to be very mindful of that because as soon as an employee is somewhat disgruntled or demotivated, it's very easy for them to pick up the phone and leave. And now in these remote days, it's even easier. You can do it on Zoom. You can be having a very important meeting in your office 1 minute, and the next minute you're hanging up and you're interviewing for a position in company B, you know? But I've never really been thinking as much of the cause. I do think that a lot of us, my generation included, we had that. We were also eager and ambitious and we wanted to get things done. Maybe we were a bit more patient back then because the context of life made us have to be a bit more patient, no? But I guess that if I had been born 15, 20 years later, I would have been in the exact same boat now. So I think that responsibility that we have as employers to these millennials is to be able to provide those answers in the degree that we can. We won't be able to, and we won't be able to handhold throughout the way, but try to make things as easy and as impactful and as deep as we can so that our employees also realize that we're in it with them. And when they win, we win. So we want them to be promoted and to be engaged and to move on to the next stage and develop their careers as much as they want it. So it's a symbiotic relationship there.
Well said. And for people out there who are interested in catching a cup of coffee with you or connecting with you over Zoom, what would be the best point of contact?
It's interesting. I mean, if it were up to me, I'd love to be able to have cups of coffee with everyone I could potentially meet. There's always interesting stories and fascinating people. The unfortunate part is an agenda, no? An agenda issue that there's just X amount of hours in a day. No, I will tell you one thing. Whenever someone sends me a meaningful message, I will always do my best to try to reply. No, be it an email, be it via LinkedIn or whatever. But I always, if there's a meaningful message, I always try to get back. No, so you can my email is available on internet, so it's fairly easy to find. And I'm also available on LinkedIn where I'm a bit more active. But again, anyone that sends me a meaningful message, something that resonates, I will always try to do my best to respond. And if I don't, I apologize in advance because sometimes just my inbox gets inundated and it's easy for me to dismiss and get distracted with something else. So I apologize in advance if anyone does and I don't reach back, or if I have in the past, someone's reached out and I haven't reached back. And it's one of those things that I normally do that either quite immediately or I too tend to forget just because the day-to-day gets so busy, you know?
Adrian, it was a pleasure having you on Geeks of the Valley, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Kunal, thank you, and thanks to Geeks of the Valley for this.
Thank you.